I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to Maths Hysteria, a podcast all about Married at First Sight. I'm Omar Abid and I'm joined, as always, by friend and co-host Kelly Rickard. How are you doing, Kelly?
I'm all right. Feel a little bit, you know, in the interest of full disclosure, just a little bit anxious today.
Oh, is it because of the dinner party last night? You're still feeling that?
I think it might be, you know. It's not good for your mental health, this programme, sometimes, is it?
No, I saw somebody had put on Twitter, actually, they watch it in the morning and it's good because it sort of wakes you up a bit, but then it sets your mood for the day, which is not ideal.
That is a really good point, because it does. My adrenaline goes through the roof sometimes.
Yeah, it's not ideal pre-bed viewing sometimes. But then, having said that, Claire and I, once Married at First Sight finishes, I put my phone away for like the first time all day, and we watch one, maybe two episodes of The Walking Dead, which is also not ideal pre-bed television.
I know, what are we all doing to ourselves? Nick loves to watch dark stuff just before bed as well. I can't do it. I have to go in another room and watch, like, Is It Cake?
The one that really got me recently was, we hadn't watched any Happy Valley until that third series came out. And I'd heard people talking.
Any of it?
Hadn't seen any of it.
Oh, wow, okay.
So we started the first series, and the first series is excellent, undoubtedly. I do think it drops off fairly significantly after that. But the first series is excellent. And every night watching it before bed, I was like, fuck me. My heart is pounding. I don't need this. Well, I enjoy it, but it does take you a little bit of time to calm down. Some chamomile tea.
Well, they did a study, and apparently couples have better sex if they watch like a thriller or something like that before bed than if they watched a rom-com, interestingly.
Makes you feel alive. Is it that kind of theory?
I think so, yeah. But I don't know what that says about me, because I literally can't handle that feeling.
What's the like most intense thing you've watched that you think, you know, I want to watch that?
Oh, good question. Probably Speed, back in like 1995.
Speed? Keanu Reeves and Sandra Bullock?
Yeah, that was intense. The bus couldn't go faster than 50 miles an hour or they all died.
I mean, to be fair, that is never normally a problem on a bus, so I do see just crawling along. I thought we did this a lot last year, but this year we didn't get a chance to put much thought into it. I thought we'd start with a game today.
Yes, I love a game.
Yeah, I think it's a good one. It might require some editing, because I think there's going to be some silences on your part.
Okay.
How many of last year's Married at First Sight Australia couples can you name?
Oh my God.
We spent so much time with them.
Oh my God, we give so much of our life, well, you do, to this. And I cannot remember a single one. Wait a minute. Can you give me a clue?
Yeah, well, there was the main one, the villain. I'll give you a story.
I've got it. So the woman that really wanted a baby and her husband, who was gaslighting continually, Holly and...
Andrew.
Nah, I'm pretending I would have remembered his name. I can't even see his face.
He's the American one. He's like gingery hair.
Oh yeah, and he was like a life coach.
Yeah.
He had like a red tinge to his skin. Yes, and he was definitely a Trump supporter. Yes.
Yeah. I'm surprised she's the one you remember first, though. Well, not really. I remember you. He really bugged you, so actually I suppose that's not a surprise.
Well, and it's also not a surprise that I would relate to a woman of a certain age that was desperate for a baby, because that was me for quite a few years.
Olivia.
Oh, was that Australia? Of course. Oh, who cut up the bridesmaid dress. Was that right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. That's right.
Okay. Yes, I remember now. And her partner, who was always at the gym.
Jackson.
That was it. Oh my God, it's there mad. Where does it go? Where does all that information go?
The girl who smashed the glass.
Dominica.
Yes.
I can see her. I liked her partner.
Jack.
I can't remember. Yes. Have you been revising this or did you genuinely remember all them?
No, I remembered some of them, but I remembered a fair few of them. But no, I did it at work, like just to see how many people could remember.
And could they?
No, it was, you've done actually quite well. But there
okay.
Do you remember Selena and Cody, where he didn't like her because of a race initially?
Oh, yes. Oh my God, yes.
There was Matt.
And then what happened at the homestays? Something ridiculous happened at the homestays with them.
He said it was a prank that they were dressing up in some like... But then there was no prank. They just like dressed up in really stupid stuff. And then that was kind of it.
I've forgotten about that. It does make me... What are we doing? It makes me worry that we spend that many hours and then it's just gone.
There were a few others. There was Dion, Carolina and Daniel, who were with other people and then ended up getting together because her partner Dion didn't like rap music or going to the gym. She liked electronic dance music.
Yeah, and there was something about them liking different coffees or something as well. It got really weird.
She likes coffee. Yeah, it's mad, isn't it?
Well, she likes coffee. It's very important that you both like the same drink in the morning.
Well, as you say, it's mad that we give these people so much of our time, but let's do even more of that. Going to start with the commitment ceremony, as always, and going into that, the big story was Sandy and Dan. I'm so pleased she put leave.
Yeah, she had to. It was the only way to kind of have any dignity, I think, after how he treated her.
As we said last week, I think her lack of experience showed a little bit, because I think she was definitely intelligent enough to recognize that he wasn't right for her and, you know, he'd mistreated her. But I think if she'd had that experience of, like you'd had, of being ushered out of someone's house with a pencil drawn map, then she would have spotted early on. Although he did like turn on a sixpence, didn't he? I think anyone would have struggled to spot early on that he was dodgy. But she might.
I did. I said quite early.
Yeah. To be fair, you did.
I can spot a player a mile off.
What are the key signs again?
Just saying all the right things. Basically, if someone's nice to me, then I think they're probably psychotic or they're planning something. Or, I mean, you might say I've got trust issues, but yeah. Just if somebody I don't, yeah, if somebody's always toeing that safe line, never saying anything inappropriate or anything accidentally or anything, it's always just, you look amazing, I really care about you, so intelligent. I'd just be like, this is a game.
When you're looking for a partner, is it important to you that they have a love of the ocean?
How many times did he mention his love of the ocean?
I've never heard anyone talk about the ocean that fucking much. It is bizarre how much he spoke about the ocean.
Do you think it was an act of genius on the part of the producers to pair a man with an odd love of the ocean with a woman with an allergy to the ocean? Like...
They're in series 10, so they've got to find some difference.
Yeah, they're like, we haven't had this before. We haven't had an ocean lover and somebody with an allergy to the ocean. So let's try that.
One of my favourite moments from that whole interaction was when Sandy shrugged his hand off her shoulder.
Oh, that was brilliant. I think it was the one and only time that she's really had any power in their dynamic. I was like, oh, yes, brilliant. At this program, though, I don't know if you ever have this moment where I watch it and I think, I wonder if I'm a bad person, because a lot of them are so open-hearted and so willing to try. And so, like, she kept saying, I did have feelings for you. I did. By that stage, I would be so shut down. Like, if somebody had slept with me and then gone off to the ocean and treated me the way he had, I would just be pretending I hadn't felt anything. And I know that's not ideal. But I do, I kind of thought it was amazing the way she was still willing to say that she'd really cared about him.
Yeah, it was very open. And I think it's good of her to be open, because it's not a totally lost experience. She has learned something from it, although it was, you know, it was not a good experience, but she's learned something from it. And I still think she did the right thing to go against her family. You know, you've got to be, it's a courageous thing to do.
It was really courageous. Yeah. Yeah, really courageous. And I don't think she should be sorry for that side of it. And I think, you know, with a bit of time, she'll realise how ridiculous he was. The moment for me was when he said, I did try and watch your films. I tried to watch your Bollywood. And then she said, yeah, with your noise-cancelling headphones on. Like, that just summed it up, really.
I mean, I've watched some Bollywood films, though, and to be honest, they're like fucking 5 hours long. You don't...
I have as well, actually, because they tick a lot of boxes for me. I like the clothes. I like singing. I like dancing. I like the romance, but they are really long, aren't they?
Yeah, they're unnecessarily long.
Why are they so long?
Does this mean we're on Dan's side now? I think it does.
Come on, let's go to Whitley Bay Beach.
The other bit I loved was that Alessandra totally had his number early on and saying to calling him by his full name. So, Daniel, why did you suddenly find her sexually attractive overnight?
Yeah, I loved her for that. But actually, I did want to ask you about that. Just to give him a tiny bit of benefit of the doubt, is there any chance that he did? Has it ever happened to you where you don't think you're interested in somebody and then it's shifted quite quickly?
Not quite quickly. The only reason I might have changed my mind is because I wanted to have sex in that moment.
Yeah, which is, I think, pretty much the point that Alessandra was trying to make.
Yeah, and she is right. It's like he thought in that moment, I don't fancy her, but I could have sex here. So that's what he did. Because men are often awful people.
I know. I don't know. I get nervous about conversations where we say, oh, this is where men and women are different, because it's all a bit, I mean, as we were saying before we kind of came on air, you've got to be careful of being too sort of cisgendered or too heteronormative, because it's not very inclusive. But of the straight men that I know and the straight women that I know, there's definite divide with men being slightly more able to separate sex from love, I think.
Well, that's the way people generally think of it, isn't it? That women have a more emotional attachment to sex.
Yeah, and there's all that studies into we end up with flooded with the oxytocin hormone, which is the bonding one.
Right.
And you just, I don't know what happens to you.
sleep.
Just straight to sleep, or maybe a little bit of Happy Valley.
Yeah. The other thing that was going on at the commitment ceremony was Bronte and Harrison just chirping up all the time.
I know. So at this point, I was still thinking, well, this is all a farce. They've agreed behind closed doors that they don't like each other, but let's just stay in the process as long as possible to up our social media following. That's genuinely what I was thinking at this point. And especially the way they kept piping up, I was like, well, they just want to be part of the drama. This all fits into that. But then I sort of started to change my mind in the next episode.
Well, yeah, maybe we should just move on from the commitment ceremony, because the big story, I would say, has been Bronte and Harrison.
Yeah.
And it's run through the retreat and then the dinner party, which was absolute carnage.
Yeah, it really was. And I still can't get a reading on what happened. So commitment ceremony, I thought, this is nonsense. It's all for show. Then the next episode where he said something about having hot sex and she went bright red and giggled. And I thought, oh my God, are they actually? So at that stage, were you thinking, oh, maybe they are having a relationship?
No, I didn't pick up on that actually. But I suppose you're right. But conversely to what we were just talking about, she thought, I'm here, may as well have sex with him, why not?
Yeah, like, to be honest, I'd rather do that than have a conversation with him.
I do know what you mean, though, because I sort of assumed with how smug they were being at the commitment ceremony and chirping in all the time on other people's relationships, and then Bronte getting very defensive and trying to say that the relationship wasn't fake at the retreat, I thought, come on, this is all for show. This is all. And when he threw her under the bus about what supposedly Leighton had been saying,
yeah,
that was unbelievable. He told her a load of shit. He was like, yeah, Leighton's been saying he hates Melinda, the relationship is toxic. Bronte then says that to Melinda, and he's like, nah, you've misunderstood.
I know.
And she apologized.
She did apologise, but I feel like the narrative that the programme was showing us that they wanted us to follow was that he was this villain and she was completely oblivious to what he was doing and the menace he was causing. But that doesn't tie in with what you're saying, which is that she knew what she was doing as well.
Yeah, I suppose.
I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just trying to make sense of where I think the truth is.
Yeah, it's very difficult with Bronte, because there's a few different ways of looking at it. It's one that she's totally just naive and she's been played by Harrison. The other is that she has come in and wanted a relationship, but from day one, I mean literally the wedding, when she's found out about him having someone else on the outside, she has decided by herself to have a storyline of the woman who is abused and then makes a righteous, like, you know, fight back against him, which, you know, we've not got to that bit of the story yet, I guess. And then the other thing is, has she just decided, actually, Harrison and I are going to be on together. Let's be on for as long as we can. We get free trips. We're not at work. We're on telly. We might get something out of it afterwards. Although people say, are they actors and stuff, or the people who just want social media followers? But you have to be likable. Being known as the villain of a series like this, yeah, you might get onto Big Brother or something, but then what is there after that? There's nothing, you know, you don't get to go on like present programs like Ryland has done really well for himself, hasn't he? Because he's likable.
It kind of goes against the way that sociology works. Like you want to be liked, you want to be socially accepted. It's really weird to go on and present that side of yourself continually. Like, none of us are perfect, but to continually misbehave and hurt people and mistreat people is a really odd thing to do when you're being watched by millions.
It is. And, you know, we've got to remember as well, the way she's acted, she has constantly broken Harrison's trust.
I loved Claire's response to that. The way she laughed and was just fantastic. So good. She's had some brilliant moments with Harrison, like when she said, take your red shirt off, put it on a flag and wave it around because you are one giant red flag. Yes.
Yeah, the problem is, though, you know, he obviously wasn't making any sense. Like, when she said to him, you know, I'm in this relationship, I've been falling in love with you, I'm willing to move to Sydney. He goes, well, that's a wishy-washy answer. What?
The opposite of wishy-washy.
It couldn't be more specific or coherent. I've told you. What else is there to address? Like,
the only way it could have been more specific and coherent is if she'd pulled out an engagement ring there and then and said, let's make this thing real. Like, let's make this a proper marriage.
Yeah. Oh, God. I mean, this is just going to be, and this is why we can't do it in any kind of order, because he said so many unbelievable things. When he's saying, oh, I can't trust you, she goes, you're the one who was out and got a girl's number, and I chose to. And he goes, why are you bringing up the past?
Oh, my God, I know. And when that wasn't working, then he decided to just throw grenades into other people's relationships, didn't he?
You know what, though? I've got to give him some credit. I hated him for it, and I was angry. It made me furious, but it worked.
It really worked. It was sad and infuriating, but it really worked. And I thought if there'd ever been a hope for Claire and Jesse, it would have been that night, because he looked so lovely in his Edward Scissorhands costume, didn't he? I genuinely fancied Jesse in that moment. I was like, oh yeah, he looks lovely. This could be the night. But she didn't deny it, did she? When he kept saying, you don't look at me the way you looked at Adam that night, and you aren't the same with me as you should be with someone that you really fancy.
That's the thing. I've always wanted it to work with Jesse and Claire, because I do like both of them. They've both made mistakes. They get on. But the issue has always been, as promising as it's looked at times, like at the retreat, they're friends. They are just friends.
Yeah. And I mean, even showed her his willy, that she just laughed, like when he ran streaked through the couple's retreat.
Yeah, it was good.
With no explanation. That was my favourite thing about it. No explanation beforehand or after.
Yeah. Yeah. It was good. He was having a good time. So I do feel sorry for both of them. And I put on Twitter, for what it's worth, I don't actually think she came back to like rehabilitate her image.
I don't.
I think she genuinely liked Jesse, and she did feel bad. A lot of what she did was out of guilt. But I think the primary reason was she wanted to see where it could go.
I think she's a good person. She's obviously a spiritual person. We know that she's into crystals and sage incense. But I don't think you'd be into all of that unless you were kind of trying to be a good person. It tends to go hand in hand. So I think I don't mean she was trying to be a good person for the purposes of people watching. I think she genuinely wanted to do a good thing and be kind and stay in it to repair stuff.
I do. I think she's fairly honest. I know, obviously, she lied about the whole kiss with Adam and things, but I'm willing to give her that as an aberration of a character rather than who she is intrinsically. Like, you know, like the way she handled... She was one of the only people who, when Bronte turned around at the retreat and said, if any of you think we're fake, just tell us now. And Claire was like, oh, yeah, do a bit, yeah.
She's British, amazingly brave and honest. I love that.
Yeah. Whereas Ollie, who I've also enjoyed, he just pops up every now and again, but it's always entertaining. He was like saying, well, I do think they're fake, but I'm not going to say anything.
He's had some great moments, actually, like when Tani went, Ollie, stop it. You're making the faces again. I was like, that's excellent. That's such a husband and wife conversation to have. Like, stop it. Everyone can tell what you're thinking.
I think my favourite bit from him was, you know, all due respect to Harrison, but when he tears up, he doesn't actually cry.
Yeah, that was really good.
I was going to say that is like, if he ever did cry, those tears would just evaporate instantly on his red, red face.
Oh, my God, I know. The thing with Harrison is he 100% lacking in kind of common human decency, or is he acting out of fear and he's literally just panicking about how he's coming across, and so it's anything to avoid looking bad?
But anything to avoid looking bad, he's definitely going about it the wrong way.
I know.
Like, when he was getting desperate at that dinner party and people were turning on him again, and he started saying to Leighton, you rang me the other day saying you'd sneak out of the gym. And Leighton was like, no, don't twist my words. I said, I can't come because it's not fair to Melinda. I've made a choice, basically. Yeah, I'd like to go to the gym, but Melinda is more important to me. That isn't like being under the thumb or it's a toxic relationship. You have to make compromises, don't you? But
yeah.
Anyway, Harrison's just trying anything at that point. But you can't do it in front of everyone because everyone can just refute what you say.
Yeah.
In public.
Yeah, that's the thing. It was like that moment in an afternoon drama when the bad guy finally gets found out.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the dinner party felt like. It was just like in chess when all the pieces are closing in on the king. It's just like, you've got nowhere to go now.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that because another tweet editor, there were so many tweets from the dinner party. It's been absurd. There was a lot going on. But Melinda, at the end, when she said, I don't need to justify my relationship to you because you're just not that important to me, or something to that effect, I nearly put checkmate Melinda.
But
I decided to go with game, set, and match Melinda. So
nice.
I wasn't sure if checkmate was Melinda in checkmate or Harrison. So I thought,
yeah, it's not so clear.
Yeah, yeah. And she definitely won that exchange.
Yeah, she did. I've loved watching how she's handled Harrison as well. What would you have thought, though? Were you kind of with Leighton when he was really cross about her and Evelyn eavesdropping?
I'd be mildly annoyed. I would be annoyed. I think it was a bit out of order.
It's a bit of a breach of trust, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Now, we've seen a lot more of Leighton, and I think he's a reasonable person, it seems. If anything, he's a little too measured. Well, I guess that's the businessman in him.
Yeah.
But
they keep saying, oh, we really struggle with these explosive rows we have. Where are they? Show us one.
Yeah, you're more explosive just going to Aldi or something.
Yeah. That's not explosive by, like, Welsh measurements.
I do know what you mean. We've not really seen them have a
proper time. No, every time we see them, they're having a little cuddle on the settee, holding hands.
Yeah, yeah. He handled it all quite well. And I think they seem pretty solid. Like the fact that Harrison's approach has actually backfired and seemed to make them closer because they actually talk to each other openly. Like,
yeah, and nothing bonds you more than having a common enemy, does it?
Well, that's
like
that's,
especially with. Sorry, go on.
No, I was going to say that's how part of Harrison's gaslighting works. It was like, again at the retreat, it was. Oh, well, let's just go. We've just got to leave. They're all against us. It's creating that siege mentality. It's us against them.
Yeah. I liked Melinda saying at the very end of, I think it was the dinner party, when she was like, there is absolutely no way that Harrison will be the reason that Leighton and I split up, or something along those lines. And I was like, actually, he's done them a massive favour.
Yeah. I will stay with Leighton just to spite Harrison.
Yeah. Three children and a house later. There you go, Harrison.
I was going to ask you, actually, that maybe the last bit on Harrison was, has anyone ever broken up with you by text message?
No, but can I tell you the most brutal way I've been broken up with?
Please.
So it was one of the rugby boys at university. I was in the second year, and I'd always said I wasn't interested in them because in Wales, rugby's very much a working class thing. Like, everybody plays it. And then I went to a really posh university and realised it was something quite different in England. Very selective, very elite. And I wasn't that keen on the rugby boys. They always used to look over my shoulder when they were talking to me, or they'd call me a peasant because of my regional accent. But anyway, he made a big play for me and went on for months. It was kind of a Dan and Sandy thing where I was like, look, I don't trust you. I feel like we're just going to sleep together and then you're going to dump me. And he kept turning up at my window at Halls with Cadbury's Dairy Milk because he'd found out it was my favourite chocolate. Went on for months. So eventually gave in. He told me when he saw me without clothes on that I could doing a few sit-ups. In the moment. And then a couple of weeks later, invited me to a pub, got me to pay for the drinks. And whilst he was sipping the beer that I'd bought him, said, look, I don't think this is going to work because, like, I went to a private school and my family have loads of money and you went to a state school. Basically said I wasn't good enough for him. And the whole time he was sipping this pint that I'd bought him with my working class money. So that, yeah, it was really brutal, that, actually.
That is harsh. That's a bad one.
But I bumped into him at a wedding years later and he sobbed on my shoulder about what big mistake he'd made. So that was quite nice.
Oh, that's some vindication, isn't it?
Yeah, it was a good moment.
He does sound like a prick, though. Like,
yeah, he was. He's probably grown up now. It was like 20 years ago.
No wonder you hate rich people.
I know, not all of them. You're all right.
I know, you commented on my Path Kidston mug.
Yeah. Sometimes I think you're whiter than me.
But another text related incident, Taylor leaving and then coming back.
Oh my God. Who is she? What's going on with her?
She's absolutely insane. I honestly don't know if she might make me angrier than Harrison.
I might agree with you there. I just can't make any sense of her.
When she came back and, well, hang on, let's start with the retreat. In fact, let's start with the commitment ceremony, because she was saying that she doesn't even want Hugo to hug her. Oh, he's always trying to, like, be nice and do things like hug me and kiss me.
Oh, and, kiss me on the cheek.
Yeah. And they went round the room and it's like all the other blokes had kissed her on the cheek as a, you know, greeting, hello, whatever, except Hugo. She doesn't.
I know. I felt so sorry for him in that moment. And then she kind of made it even worse at the retreat when she was like, me and my ex, we just used to go to Pound Town every day. And Hugo's just there.
Yeah, he's like within earshot. Oh, and he's messaging me just basically asking for phone sex at the moment.
I know. And also because he'd said in an earlier scene, this was clever editing, he'd gone, well, she has intimacy issues. That woman does not have intimacy issues. She's just got Hugo issues.
Yeah, yeah. And she was saying, oh, I'm pretending to like him. That's pretending to like him.
Didn't she say, I'm pretending to care, but I don't?
Yeah, yeah. That's it. That was it, yeah.
That's harsh.
She was saying that the commitment ceremony, she doesn't seem to understand that, like, just because she hasn't overtly said anything mean, like, oh, Hugo, you're stupid, or I don't like you, or whatever, that just her interactions with him have been quite cruel. She doesn't seem to understand that. But I wonder if she does understand it, or if she is, and she's pretending not to, or she is actually that stupid that she doesn't understand the way she's making someone feel.
Yeah, I don't know. I was trying to play devil's advocate with it in my own head. I was like, because obviously we know he's called her names and stuff when he's drunk and out with the lads. And I was like, what if there's a tiny point to when she says, you're lying? What if behind closed doors, he's not quite as nice? But even then I was like, even if he's really not that nice, she's still being absolutely despicable. So I couldn't find a way to redeem her. Yeah, I just couldn't.
I just don't think there is. When she came back, like the end of the dinner party, when I was emotionally exhausted, I thought. And then the clip-clopping of heels. So again, really good.
Oh, attitude. That was my most favourite moment of this week. Just her coming out of the shadows, clomping in on her heels, and everyone's like, is that someone there? Who's that? That was
They did it so well that I actually thought for a second, oh my God, is this going to be someone from a previous series or something? I was like, of course it was going to be Taylor, but I was just so excited. It was like something out of a Marvel film, like, oh my God, that's Harry Styles.
It was really good.
Yeah. And then she came in and they sat down and she goes, I'm going to choose to give you a second chance because...
I know. I loved him in that moment, though. How he handled it was brilliant.
It was brilliant. I'm so happy that she offered to give him a second chance and he said, I'd rather not.
Yeah, but even that, he was so dignified when he could have been mean. He could have been like, are you actually joking? I wouldn't give you a second chance. But he was just like, look, let's be honest. We don't feel right about each other. I was like, wow, well done. Yeah. That's reasonable.
That is reasonable. Yeah, and of course he's right to do it. Like, what a waste of his time this has been. He's got for it is a bad back from sleeping on the windowsill.
Yeah. God, I know. I mean, that was harsh to begin with. But we have seen relationships like that before where it starts off with, it's often the woman keeping the man at arm's length and then the relationship evolves. But there was no evolving. It went backwards, if anything.
Yeah, it got worse. And she does a very, I want to say Donald Trump style thing. Whenever any criticism of any kind is brought to her, she'll just say, no, that's not true. That's a lie.
Yeah.
That's a lie.
It's yeah.
Like, it's not a lie. You have been quite cruel to him. Like, we can see that from just the way you talk to him.
And the other girls really didn't like her. It was a proper, they realised how she was with the other lads, didn't they? And she's definitely got a thing for Cam. And have you noticed how she is with Ollie?
Yeah. A lot of people have said on Twitter that when she was storming off at the retreat that Cam gave her a hug and you could see some kind of little flicker between them. I suppose the only other issue about it is just like how much they're contractually obligated to be there. Because the fact she wanted to leave and then she wanted to leave after the commitment ceremony, but then chose to stay, presumably because they were going on a trip, which is nice, you know, get a free trip.
Yeah.
And then she ran off in the middle of the night to go back to Tassie. And then came back again for the dinner party to make a dramatic entrance, only to be dumped horrendously by Hugo. But how much do they have to be in there? Like, because people were saying on Twitter, like, oh, well, do they get paid or do they get bonuses for how long they're in there? It's like they don't get any money or anything.
They will have signed an agreement to say, they'll have signed things saying, like, I understand that I have to stay if my partner says stay. I understand that. I know when I've done random bits, like when Nick and I did Couples Come Dine With Me, we had to sign to say certain things that like we would see the three nights through no matter what had happened. And
right, okay, yeah.
So I imagine they've signed stuff saying that they were, you know, she probably wasn't allowed to leave just of her own accord in the middle of the night, I would think.
Yeah, they probably told her that. They probably showed her the contract, you know, over a video call while she was back in Tassie. And said, you have to come back for the dinner party or we will sue you. And we won't make you stay for the commitment ceremony, but you better be back here tomorrow at your own expense.
Yeah.
One of my other favourite moments of the week, and I always think of you when I think of this man, Rupert. When he stood up to Harrison, brilliant.
I genuinely would choose him out of all the men, you know. I would choose Rupert.
That doesn't surprise me at all. You'd just be laughing all day.
He's so brilliant. What's been your favourite Rupert moment this week?
Well, that is definitely that. When he said, I'm not here to get, why would I care that you don't trust me? I'm not here to gain your trust. I'm here to gain Evelyn's trust. Harrison was just like, what?
I loved it. It was so manly and alpha male out of nowhere.
And what about the bit in the hot tub when Melinda got in and he was like, well, I just thought this was going to be me and Evie, but all right, you're welcome. It's nice to see you.
He's good. I like that side to him. That's the side that, like, a player wouldn't do that. You know what I mean? A player would be like, hey, come join us. How are you? But he's just like, what are you doing?
Yeah. Even talking about sex with Evelyn, which is something I had wondered about, like that they've not really spoken about. And he said, we've done stuff, but we've not, you know, not gone all the way.
Yeah, what stuff do you think they've done?
Just like being in the same room at the same time.
Well, we know that she's got her vibrator with her.
Do we? How do we know that?
So what's the evil villain girl that's just left? Taylor. When Taylor was saying she's got a big bag of sex toys, Evelyn was like, oh, yeah, I brought my vibrator with me. I don't go anywhere without it.
Wow.
Did you miss that?
I must have missed it. And I would have definitely taken note of that.
Yeah. And then Alyssa was pretending to be okay with it. She was like, oh, it's really important. Yeah, that's great. But I could tell that she didn't mean it.
Yeah, she's, well, Alyssa, God, we might have to do a whole separate podcast about Alyssa.
I know.
What do you think? How do you think it's going with Evelyn and Rupert? Because I actually think that slightly more assertive side coming out is definitely a good thing.
It's a really good thing. I don't know. I really, really would love it to work. But at the moment, with what we're seeing, she seems a bit more caught up in the drama with the other couples than in stuff that's happening with Rupert. But that might just be how it's been edited.
Yeah, it could just be because they're going along so smoothly that there's not much else to say about them, really.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're basically in the same position as Melinda and Leighton. And it's interesting that those four seem to be friends. They wanted the guest house at the retreat and everything.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, it was Melinda and Evelyn who... Evelyn seems quite funny when she's drunk. She seems quite, like...
I think she's great. I really like her.
Yeah, she seems good fun. So I'm curious, but I do wonder if there's a, like, romantic spark in the same way as with Jesse and Claire. Like, I think they get on and everything. They're both nice people, but is there going to be more than that?
I think the difference with Rupert and Evelyn is we know he really fancies her. So there's at least one of them that's really interested. Whereas with Jesse and Claire, never even really believed he was interested either.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't. Oh,
I think he was. I think he was. But, I mean, you know, it takes two to tango.
Yeah.
It takes two to go to a guitar shop and just...
Oh, God, that looks like the world's worst day, that. My God, squash and then a guitar shop.
I must have spent plenty of time in guitar shops.
Yeah, in the beginning, when like I had to pretend to be into stuff like you do. No, I do. I don't mind a guitar shop because obviously I sing and Nick plays guitar. I don't mind it for a little bit. I don't like it when I can see I've totally lost him. And he's glazed over and we've been in there for hours and now he's pulling another one down off the wall. I don't like it when it gets too long.
That's right.
40 minutes. He's got my interest with looking at the guitars for about 40 minutes. After that, no.
Yeah, that's a reasonable amount of time.
Thanks. I think that's quite reasonable.
Yeah, that's probably more than I would expect. And that's not from you specifically, but I just mean that's a reasonable
amount of time. Of a person.
Yeah, of a person.
I mean, I think if there was ever going to be a spark, something like that comment would ignite it. Like him saying to Harrison, who's the big villain, I'm not here for you, I'm here for her. I would love that.
Yeah, yeah.
Be like, come on, Rupert, let's go home.
And yeah, you can stay in the other room while I use my vibrator.
Well, I know it's me. I was wondering when she said she'd brought it with her. I was like, has she brought it with her to use in the context of this marriage or to use in case the marriage doesn't go according to plan?
You can use it in the context of a perfectly happy marriage.
Yes, absolutely.
One weird response, I thought, at the dinner party was Lyndall putting the glass over her face.
Oh, I don't know if I saw that.
Yeah, she was feeling so bad for Jesse and how things were going. She was so awkward that she was just trying to hide her face behind a big wine glass.
That is weird. I do think she's quite authentic and empathetic, though. I've noticed her in the commitment ceremony. She seems to really feel for the other people in the experiment, and I like that. But I missed that bit with the glass.
Yeah, she does seem to get. I don't want to say she's emotional because either, like, you know, that.
But that's some... okay. It's not a bad thing to be.
No, it's not. It's like, I suppose, again, to go back to Harrison when he said to Claire, your emotional response tells me this. Like, well, that's not a bad, you know, stop trying to change the perception of, you know, because that I'm some emotional, crazy person. Obviously, being emotional is not inherently a bad thing.
No, but I think you're right that women are used to that word being weaponized, aren't they? They're used to it being, it's one step away from being called irrational, isn't it?
Yeah. It's just we seem to see a lot of crying, you know.
Yeah. But I wonder if it is quite hard to be in her situation because of everything she's been through. I think she genuinely came into this looking for the love of her life. And they had such a strong start. And then I don't know about Cam.
The only thing I liked about Cam was early on they had a nice conversation about Lindell's life-threatening cystic fibrosis. So just this is a second take because Kelly laughed the first time I said
it's just because of the way you said it. That's not funny. The life-threatening illness is not funny. And you got to stop it. And he was lovely. He was really nice in that moment.
He was. They did have a good conversation. He was quite supportive. But then after that, and let's be fair, though, you would expect someone to be supportive, especially if they've had a friend who has lost their partner to the same illness.
So, yeah.
Well done to Cam, but it was the response you would assume any decent person would give.
That's true.
Since then, he's just been like, oh, my mum thinks you're insecure. I don't want to give you a hug, even though he's fucking hugging Taylor, who's awful, you know.
Yeah. He doesn't seem that into her anymore.
No. We never see
anyone. Which makes me really sad.
I feel sorry for her. I feel sorry.
And I didn't, this is a couple where I didn't see that come in. I think in the first week when we were talking about couples, I thought they had a really good chance.
Yeah, they were in the very first episode. I remember the very first tweet being about Lindell and her diagnosis and then the life-saving drug. And can you remember who the other couple were in the first episode?
Was it Dan and Sandy?
No. It was Harrison and Bronte.
Oh, were they in the first? Right, okay.
Yeah. The reason I bring it up is because what they've done in all previous series is there'll be one couple where it's a nightmare, and obviously Harrison and Bronte with the whole fiasco at the wedding, that was the nightmare. And then the other wedding's meant to be like one of the
big love stories.
The big love stories. So I sort of assumed they'd go on all right, but...
Yeah. That's interesting. So do you think they've obviously gone a different way maybe this time? They thought, that format's getting a bit predictable.
Yeah, they've realised Omar's onto us. So
yeah. Omar, the mad fan.
We'd better shuffle the pack ever so slightly because one person in the northeast of England has rumbled us. We'll see. I'm not confident about them anymore. They might stumble on to the end, but
I know. And the other couple that had a really, really strong start, but it's going a bit pear-shaped, is Alyssa and Duncan, isn't it?
She's out of her fucking mind.
I don't know if it's just me, right? I don't know what you're like, but I absolutely love a bit of time on my own. Like, if I was on a couple's retreat and Nick went, we're going to go off and play tennis or whatever it was they were doing, I'd be like, amazing. Look at this world of choice laying before me. I can have a bath. I can read a book. I am the proper geek. I would probably read in that situation. But I mean, maybe I'm lucky. Maybe I'm not horribly insecure. But my God, that felt... And he really did respond in such a lovely way. And he was really supportive and sort of really reassuring her. But she didn't seem to hear it.
No matter how much reassurance he gave her, starting with the commitment ceremony where he did it in front of everyone, then literally the next episode, she's upset that he's been playing tennis. And, you know, went through the whole thing of, I don't know where you've been all day. Well, he's probably within a 5-minute walk because it's not that big a retreat, you know. And she goes, you've been playing tennis all day. Like, so you do know where I've been. You could have come over. It's like, why should I have to come over? You know, the argument was absurd.
I mean, I can understand how like a bit of miscommunication like that could happen if you were away with other couples. But I kind of get it. And I think maybe it depends on your sort of culture as well. Like growing up in Wales as a teenager, I had loads of friends, both male and female. We're still friends now. Me and Nick are going away with them all this weekend. Like, but then I moved up here and it was like the boys go out together and the girls go out together. And it took me a while to get used to that. So I don't know. If we're trying to be kind, maybe Alyssa's from a culture where she didn't understand why it was so separate, so polarised. But even then, once he started explaining, it just wasn't going in, I don't think.
No, it definitely wasn't. And when she was saying, I need attention, give me attention. Can I give you a hug? No.
Yeah, I didn't understand that.
Well, I do get it, to be fair. I feel I've had a bit of a cheap shot because at that point in an argument, and, you know, he's being very reasonable. You know, don't get me wrong, she was totally being mad and he's being very reasonable. But once she's got into that state, she's not in a place where she wants a hug. So I couldn't understand. Understand the going no. But it was that he made the only slight thing he did, which was a mistake, I think, is the "I'm sorry you feel that way" apology. It's just not. It's, now it's become a thing where saying that is almost more likely to infuriate someone than actually placate them.
And I'm so glad people have started to realise that, because that's always done my head in, that one. But yeah. It's really nice to have swathes of people now going, yeah, that's a shit apology.
But that was the only misstep he made, I thought. It's like, yeah, they must be spending every minute of every day together for months, and then they go away. And to take it back to what you said at the beginning, I am like that as well. I need some time by myself, definitely. Otherwise, I just get a bit cranky, and so I need some time alone, or just time with other people as well. But even then, I definitely need time by myself. So,
do you remember those series of books that was out? I think it was in the 90s, called Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. Do you remember them? Uh-huh. So the whole premise of those books was that it was essentially written for women to just let their men go off and do their own thing. But it was like, he needs to go to his man cave. He needs some downtime after work. You should have a can of beer ready for him and just leave him alone for it. It was so ridiculous and dated and old fashioned. But I actually think they were onto something. But what they didn't get was that both sexes need that. Like, both genders need that. And it makes you more interesting. It means you've got something to bring back and talk about. It's a bit weird, but maybe she is really, really insecure from stuff that's happened. Because that's what it seemed like to me. It was like a self-fulfilling prophecy that happens where she's panicked that he's not that into her, and she's got a son, and now she's kind of pushing him away and making him retreat, because what else can he do?
Yeah, exactly. It's self-sabotage, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's what she's doing. And even knowing that, it's hard to have any sympathy for her when she was going to the girls and totally misrepresenting the conversation and doing that thing where she's doing an impression of him and going, you know, putting on this like angry, aggressive tone. Yeah. Why don't you just tell me what the problem is? It's like, you really didn't say it like that. You're not outright lying, but it's pretty much lying that you're misrepresenting it that much. And also saying, oh, he's never really been my type. Fuck off.
That was weird. I loved the other women's. I mean, obviously I said that, but I'm allowed to because I'm weird. But like, all of the other women were like, what?
Yeah, just no one believes her. I don't know what she's gonna ruin it for herself.
I think so.
Yeah. The thing is, right, Duncan, he seems a nice, reasonable, good looking fella. He seems a bit dull to me.
As in unintelligent or as in boring?
As in boring.
Ooh.
You know, there are people I hate who've... Harrison's made me laugh more than Duncan has. Like when he did that bit about... I mean, to be honest, even at the dinner party, like I say, he generally made me very angry. This dinner party just gone. But some of the stuff, like his little smirks and things, it did make me laugh a little bit.
It was so villainous, though, like smiling at Claire and Jesse breaking up at the table. I was like, what? Who are you?
But then he seemed instantly bored once they'd broken up. He was just like scratching his head. Just like, what else should I do? But when my favourite, and there haven't been many, comedic Harrison moment was when he said to Melinda, oh, I've made a real change and I'm glad you noticed it. Thank you.
Oh, that was amazing.
With a shit.
It was such
grin.
A teenage boy thing to do.
Yeah, so Duncan, there's never even been a moment like that with Duncan.
No, I love that I got offended on his behalf, but I'm allowed to say that he's not bright, but you're not allowed to say he's boring. Somehow that's harsher. No, I totally get what you mean. And I think I said it on a previous episode. I mean, I know we've always got to be aware that we don't know about the editing and that, but he hasn't said anything funny. I feel so mean now. The poor lad, he's been through enough with Alyssa.
We would have seen something by now, surely.
Yeah.
And look, it's not the worst crime in the world to not, but not everyone can be as funny as us, Kelly, you know.
And thank God. Because it's hard enough to get gigs.
Well, next week's going to start with the, I believe it's the penultimate commitment ceremony. So
hang on, how long have we got left?
We have got, I think, 3 weeks left.
Good God, it's never ending.
Are you starting to feel the fatigue now, Kelly?
But it's just such a commitment. I know I say it every time, but it is, isn't it? Like when you've got, I mean, for everyone, not just us, but like when you've got work and families and dogs and partners, it's a commitment, this.
It is. The thing is, when I first got into it with series five or something, it was during the lockdown. I think it was series five. It was the one before Cyrell and all this. Part of the enjoyment of it was Claire and I would just dip in and out. It was just on while we were eating our tea, and we'd watch half an hour of it, and then it'd be like, all right, let's put on whatever.
Let's watch something proper.
Yeah, exactly. But then gradually we got more and more sucked in, and now obviously it's become a cornerstone of my life, apparently. So it's,
I know. How has this happened to us?
I don't know. I will say though, like, thank you to everyone who started following us. Our follower numbers have gone through the roof the last few weeks. So,
well, that is because of you though, because of all of your tweets and all of your social media input. And I turn up and do this. I like this bit. I love this. I love chatting about relationships and stuff. I would do it all the time, but I'm terrible at the social media side of things. So that's because of you.
Oh, thank you, Kelly. Well, it's good because, you know, I do all that, and then you come on and tell us about your terrible breakups.
Yeah, you'll want to edit that because it was about 15 minutes long.
No, I was enthralled. It was just so horrible.
Should I give his name at the end?
So anyway, coming to, well, closer to the end of the experiment, who do we think's going to make? Well, I'll tell you what. Who do you think's going on the commitment ceremony?
Oh, Harrison and Bronte.
You think?
Think, don't you?
I've got a bad feeling, you know.
Oh my God, you think they're going to stay?
What if, right? Because look, Harrison is unbelievable. What if he puts stay to say?
I wouldn't be surprised. But surely, like, surely the experts would let Bronte leave. Surely they'd be like, for her mental health, she can go. Unless they think she's just in it for the, you know, for the follows as well.
I don't know. I really don't know. In theory, yes, they should leave. They should both put leave. With the situation being as it was at the end of the commitments, at the end of the dinner party. But I've got a bad feeling.
Do you think the experts are going to, you know, they like to talk about holding people accountable. They love that phrase. Do you think they're just going to hold Harrison accountable, or is Bronte going to be told off as well?
That's a good question.
Thanks.
I think it's all going to be Harrison. I think they're going to have a go at Harrison.
Yeah.
Is Bronte accountable? What's Bronte accountable for?
For playing the victim, being the victim and not realising. I don't know.
Yeah.
I just wonder if they'll say to her, did you honestly not see this behaviour and realise, you know, that it was gaslighting?
Well, this is the debate, isn't it? And if we don't know what her intent is, like, does she just want to be on there to be famous and play, and she's playing the victim, or is it she's actually a victim and she's so far in the gaslighting wormhole that she can't see what everyone else can see, which is how it happens, apparently, isn't it? Everyone is telling you, but you just don't. You think they're wrong.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if they'll go into that, because that could be a bit of a minefield.
Anyone else think anyone else will leave?
Claire and Jesse have got to leave.
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, which will be a shame, but I think it's right.
I think they might leave amicably with lots of tears all round.
Yeah, I'll be sad. I was sad to see what happened at the dinner party, but it does feel like the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what a sad
one. It was a sad, just a little bit of reverie there. Yeah. I forgot we were meant to be trying to be entertaining.
No, we've decided we're going to end this one on a downer. So that's us for this week. I've been Omar Abid.
I've been Kelly Rickard.
And I'd like to say, Kelly, I don't like you or dislike you, but I do think you're rude, arrogant, and you ignore me. Actually, sorry, because I do want to say a little bit more about that bit. Like, we were going to end there, but when someone actually hates you, they definitely start by going, I don't like you or dislike you, actually.
Yeah. What's coming next is just going to be the hatred spouting forth.
Yeah.
That's just a precursor to, and now here comes the hate.
Yeah. It ties on to the thing about him being like, emotion is a negative thing and it means you're not being rational. So actually, I'm being quite impartial and objective, but then I'm going to list all the things that I don't like about you, but just as a purely objective exercise, not because I fucking hate you.
I'm so rational. Nah, 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 nah.
The softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us.
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.